moved over to primarily not seeing her as a woman. But 45 is still doing that. And the same thing, she looks at me as a dude and says, there's a guy. What I'm saying is important to both see yourselves as going through transitions, because of the real everyday world you're putting yourselves in by living in Columbus. And at the same time, no, there's still a good part of you, just like every other Stanford student. You are both things. Is the example clear enough? I can talk more about synergy some other time. There are numbers of things that synergy is doing locally, and there's numbers of things New Ways to Work is doing locally. In terms of really trying to, the New Ways to Work is doing is it's working, trying to get regular human beings in the culture to call New Ways to Work and tell us things they see in the society that are not being met. Now I'm going to give you a specific example. One that one wouldn't see very easily, one that you could see pretty easily. Nowadays, that one isn't just a mom or a dad, one parents. One takes a lot of time on parenting. So one of the things that a good parent wants often is to know stories, music, and tapes that are appropriate for their children. But there's really nobody out there trying to figure out how to facilitate families understanding that idiosyncratically for their own family. So one of the things we're interested in, this is an example of what I'm using. So there's a social need out there. One of the things we're trying to do is get people to perceive social needs, let New Ways to Work know that, and then help other people build small businesses to meet that social need. Now there's a social need that's a bit more specific that one wouldn't see, which is people who are dying, which is called hospice care, in the way that synergy works with it. Many of those people have children, and there's no regular referral system of how to find caregivers for children, a family who somebody's dying in. So part of what New Ways to Work is doing is trying to set up a networking process. We're trying to encourage people at random, just simply call the office and say, you know, I was thinking the other day there's not X, whatever there is. And then we say, great, thanks. And then we try to help people figure out how to make a living taking care of X. Yeah, that's one of the things that's going on. Another area that's going on is we're trying to help employees to employees facilitate their work. When they have some problems, to call New Ways to Work and help us facilitate them. And sometimes to help facilitate between employer and employees. In the other areas, we're trying to do workshops, trying to get people to think about the actual consequences of their particular labor in terms of their own value system. Not in terms of what their corporation or their business is producing, but what they're actually doing with their time. And what's the relationship between their use of their own time and their personal value systems. And once they become clear on that, what, if anything, do they want to do about it? So these are some of the things that New Ways to Work is doing now. New Ways to Work used to primarily help people find jobs. But that's not what we're trying to do now. There are a number of other agencies doing that. We're trying to do these other things. So what I'd like, at some point, if Columbe would sit, and I'm happy to come to another get-together if that's useful, to decide if there's some kind of project outside the context of Stanford University that the house itself might want to participate in. And then to discuss that. It may not be things for New Ways to Work or synergy, it may be in some other fashion. Doesn't mean that everybody, all times, does it. What it means is that people have an awareness that part of your community effort is to be outside the context. And that's just a suggestion I have. I'd like to field some questions. The questions don't have to have anything to do with anything I've said. I was trying to give you some sense of the lineage. I hope I have a little. Try to give you what I've perceived over the years to be some key elements that if you keep it in mind may allow the community to be healthier, fuller for you. And I'm interested in as nitty-gritty questions as possible that I might be able to facilitate or help. Can you tell me the time?
Mm-hmm.
Good, thank you.
Can I ask a question? I guess it's my personal question. I think what you've said has opened up my eyes on a lot of things. And I'm sort of reflecting from a number of specific examples of people who take an idea and apply it in a very specific context, like building a school in Toronto, or doing something like that. I'm really concerned with the religious and moral context of America right now, and how that's perceived by so many people who call themselves Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And my belief is that there's really a wonderful opportunity out there, and there are some organizations following up on that, but for the most part there's a real division, a very strong right religion. And I'm wondering what one person or group of people do to start opening up that to seeing things in a broader, less monolithic way, and applying what you're talking about, social shame, to that, what I feel is a very ripe, very rich, very wealthy, and very capable, huge group of people in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Good, I understand your question. Other people understand the question? Pardon? You don't? As I understand it, it's a many-pronged question, with the context being about this religious community. And given that there's lots of questions now in the United States of who's really a heavy religious person, you know, what's the right thing for religious people to do, and there's lots of fighting now amongst the conventional religious world about that, particularly the Christian world. Given that there's all that debate, you're also seeing an opportunity in the midst of the debate. And therefore, how can we broaden the debate in the ways that you would prefer to broaden it? And he hadn't told us how he prefers to. Is that a fair summation? No, you're not real happy about it, but you live with it.
I think that I might broaden it to say, we talk about social change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a lot of hierarchies of religions that would oppose social change, and lots of roots of religion that would support social change.
Is that any more helpful to you? Okay, these things will take some time to understand. That's why I think it's important, if we're interested in communicating, that somebody take the risk to articulate. The rest of us take the risk to indicate we've understood the articulation before we jump in. I'll give you, from my perception, what some of the keys are to this. The most important thing is, I would never try to do anything with anybody that makes them feel like you're trying to do something to them. Now, this is a very serious problem, very serious, because during the anti-war movement, part of what we were continually dealing with, and remember, the anti-war movement was only called that because Americans were getting their asses shot. Obviously, there's wars all over the world. I mean, the only reason we don't have an anti-war movement is you're not going to get shot tomorrow. You know, just catch that one. And otherwise, we'd have a perpetual anti-war movement. Right? Okay. Okay. I mean, I say that because in Nicaragua, obviously, right near our school and other places, people are getting shot. You know, so from our point of view, we really got our asses on line. Difficulty is, and there's an excellent book, I referred it to this group before, called In Dubious Battle by John Steinbeck. It's a very embarrassing book for somebody interested in social change to read, because it shows the contradictions an organizer goes through between inspiring and manipulating, and how difficult that is, and the kind of choices you have to make. Let me just back up for just a moment. We can no longer use the word social change in this country, by the way, because lots of people have different understandings of what the social is that they want to change. That's really changed. We have to change our vocabulary. We're outdated. Jerry Falwell is a social change activist. There's no question about that. He has very fundamental things he's trying to change. Ronald Reagan is very much a social activist. Duke Machen has changed some things in this state that will have very long effects already. So it's not simply that we're social change. We have to figure out vocabulary of what kind of social change we're talking about. Okay, that's a burden. We have to think about that. We've left that alone too long. Okay? So the most important thing initially is, if I'm limited in time, which we always are, is what's the difference between convincing somebody and communicating with somebody? Usually two things are the difference. One is that if the other person isn't already in the wavelength you are, even if they differ with you, if they're not in the same wavelength with you are, to communicate with them will take a lot more time than to convince them. So you can't short step time. Can't short step time. Second is that communication is a team sport. And you should never forget that. It takes two to do it, or more, but it's a participatory thing, just like education is, except most places don't believe that. So you've already started some things in conventional terms that are social changing. If you remember, some things are going to take time, that it means that both participants have to get into it and do it with each other. And if you want to convince somebody, essentially it's a softer word for cajole. So if you want somebody to give $10 to Nicaragua, you figure out how to jump up and down and wave your hands and do whatever you're going to do, so they give you $10 and you leave. If you decide that you want them to understand why they're giving the $10, so that over time they'll be motivated to give their own $10 you got a different kind of use of your time. And you're always having to make decisions about that. That's why it's very important to understand your principles. And that's why the community, Colon Bay, has to understand its principles. Because you're regularly making choices about which ones you have time to put in and which ones you don't. Now, one of the roots of being radical from the old biblical term is, the word radical is very specific. It means getting to the root of something. Getting to the root of something. Now, why I train in the martial arts is that part of what the martial arts is about is showing you that if you get to the roots of something, it has an effect on you. That if you do good work, if you really get in to understand something, it's going to change who you are. So if you really want to figure out, let's say you've got your constituency, it's a religious community, and so on and so forth, you want to spend time, and you remember these little keys I'm giving you. And the next step is, are you prepared to face the reality that's presented to you? You see? That's very real. Part of why often college students have difficulty communicating to parents, not that parents don't understand, parents don't want to understand. Because what many people are asking their parents to confront is more painful than what they want to confront, given what they're doing with their time. So you're not going to be able to have a whole lot of really give-and-take communication if somebody you're communicating with doesn't want to tolerate the impact of what they're going to see once they see it. I say that because that also happens in the religious community. A fundamentalist is not interested in finding out if she or he are really not living the testament the ways they're going to learn to see it from your point of view. It means all kinds of changes are going to take place. So part of what I see when I look at resistance to different things is trying to see what is it from that person's point of view that's making them resist so much. You see? So part of education is being quiet enough to try to see other people. Not laying a number on, not getting there like a gladiator from the West in all his armor and his nice shiny horse riding in. It's much more like the Taoist Tai Chi master, just sitting there, moving, flowing, seeing which way it goes and moving with it and so on and so forth. And that makes you very un-American. Somebody says, well, cut out all this shit, just what do you believe? Should we be doing this? Well, it's hard, you know, because that's not really the question for you. You're saying, well, how can I communicate with you? How can I do this back and forth with you? Do you have anything you want to ask? If it could be anything.
Yeah, I'm just trying to set everything out, and I'm thinking about things that come to the community, and things come off, and I'm trying to sort out the issues about, like, someone mentioned that we're trying to do specific things, and I was just trying to figure out the issues of, you know, in giving someone food and helping them, or giving someone a fish or teaching them how to fish.
That's good. It's a good, solid question to consider. It's a very good, it's a hard question to come up with. You know, when Colon Bay was doing some of our projects initially, we agreed to do projects with people just like us. So we went to Los Altos and Atherton and Woodside, and it was much more difficult than East Palo Alto. Because people said, Jesus, man, you're Stanford students. You're white, you're good looking, you're rich. What the hell are you doing? Jeez. And there we were with people who thought we were one with them. And we were really finding it was very difficult. East Palo Alto, if they're not offended by you guys thinking you're better than you are, which they probably won't be, but assuming that they're not, they're delighted to have you guys help. Yeah, just show up every day you say you're going to show up, otherwise we won't feel that you're trustworthy. So in some ways, part of the decision is, do you want to render a service to a group of people who really know that they have a need and are more than delighted to be given a hand with it, particularly if you're not presumptuous with it? Or do you want to educate a constituency that you're one of and deal with that issue? No, I got no preferences. I'm just trying to tell you how we did the experiment initially. So what we did was we'd go out to other Stanford students, as an example, in ROTC, and we'd bring them granola, as some of you have heard before, and we'd work with them and spend time with them. Right. And it worked over time. A large number of those people quit ROTC. But it was much more difficult than going to East Palo Alto, because we really got into us and us. And those are the kind of things that might be worth your while to consider. What would it mean Colum Bay to do something consistently in a middle, upper middle class white neighborhood? What does it mean to educate about Nicaragua? What does it mean to talk about the disparities between East Palo Alto and Atherton when they're right next to each other in Atherton, not East Palo Alto? They know the effort, you know. They know. We're up here. I'm just suggesting it might be interesting to do that as a contribution. I'm just suggesting this. But I asked you because you looked like you were getting bored with what I was doing. And now that I know you were processing yourself, I understood that I was saying more than you could take in. But I just wanted, that's why I asked you. I wanted to get a sense of what you're doing. Thanks.
I tend to think of the house in terms of the day-to-day activities. And, you know, like this large question of how to work with, fundamentalist Christian services. Like the kind of thing where if one party doesn't want to deal with it, they can just sort of close the door on you, but you're not living in the same building. It's not like, you know, like if you want to just, you know, live your life, or someone else wants to live their life, doesn't want to include you in it, that there's nothing you can do about it. However, what I'm thinking of is the difficulties of house decisions when we're all living in the same building and we can't close the door on each other. And sometimes I don't know how to phrase this, but sometimes, like, within a house meeting or a discussion, that people get very emotionally involved with how they feel, like, you know, whether or not people want to have crashers stay, if so, which crashers, and like that was something we grappled with last year. And sometimes that can really, sometimes the problem is that with a difficult issue, instead of having coming to the essence of it, finding something everyone can live with, we can divide people instead. And that's very painful. Especially when you come down right to the essence of the problem, you find that people's needs and values are very different, and that seemingly there isn't a compromise that makes everyone, but there isn't an action that makes everyone feel like they're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. It's a general kind of question, so I'm not going to ask the people on the set. I'm just going to get into the drift of what you're saying,
yeah.
If that's all right with you.
Yeah, please redigest.
Part of why I was trying to convey earlier that there is, in fact, a culture called Colombia that you're a part of, is that if people were not burdened by the sense of lineage is something you can draw upon. It's an agreement that there's certain kind of questions people are prepared to struggle with. That's different from saying there's an agreement people have about how they're going to find their answers. See, so a group of Quakers or a group of Hopis get together, they have a number of things they have in common. Nobody ever said that Colombe people have that kind of depth in common. But there can be a few things that the house has as an agreement that you do have in common. One of the things that you can have in common is grappling with certain kind of issues, you see? So what happens is when you have differences of opinion, fundamental differences of opinion, that there's some reminder that somebody in the group at the evening, or the day, whatever you do it, reminds people the thing that's getting you together is that you have agreed to struggle with some of these things. That's the part that you have agreed to. See, that's where the reminding comes in. It's not like a religion in any sense, but it is like a community, which is different in the sense that the community has agreed that there are certain things that make up the turf of the community. There can be some very serious differences. But if people said that the reason they're there is to process those kind of questions and then to figure out ways that the community can live with the differences, then you can have a workable community. Maybe that even some of the people leave the community. It depends upon the spirit in which they leave and who stays. So I feel like the essence of what you're getting to, from my point of view, has to do with what have people agreed to as members of the community to grapple with.
Yeah. Well, part of my question was to use it as a gentle reminder that even as working as a community is not necessarily happens and are happy always, the outcome isn't always happy, it can be painful.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that this will be wonderful, but, mm-hmm. but there's often something will just come and get under people's skin.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let me see if I can stay with this just for a second more. Because you pose it in terms of you kind of being a woman whose feet are on the ground every day worrying about how the food's going. You're not quite sure how to grapple with this general issue.
Well, no, what I'm talking about is that the issues, Kalmbe as a community, the things that I'm concerned with are things that affect me in the house, and I'm not so interested in going out and working with these Palo Alto and those kind of issues and all that stuff. You could do that. The house is a living community, and in some ways the social change, the nonviolence and its aspects of it aren't entirely New York to me, other than as they affect me within the house, or how we choose to do more careers and things like that. I mean, the aspects which are reflected in the workings of the house, I see it, but so I'm talking about that change. I do understand the problems of the kinds of things we do within the house. I was trying to do that contrast to the,
that's right, I understood.
Being involved in America.
Right. What I'm trying to do is point out that both of you have your feet on the ground.
Yeah.
No. Hang on with me just for a second, if you can. What you need to do, not you personally, but the community, because I'm very pleased that you pose this, because it's obviously essential to the community to hear the dialogue, is that there has to be some mutual respect that from both people's point of view, they feel their feet are on the ground.
Yeah.
Now, and to have both groups have some kind of discussion of what the ways that you can work are. That is, the nature of a community is to make a community work. And you have to then decide what that means. If he says, as an example, for lack of better experience, better reference, I don't need to eat for 3 days so I can get certain things done, so it doesn't matter to me if the cooking doesn't take place. You say to him, you got it. You got it. What happens? You say, all right, let's try it. And the second day he says, you know, I'm hungry. And the reverse takes place. He says, you know, I've been watching the administration, and unless we do X, Y, and Z, there's a good chance they're going to close us down. And you say, geez, you know, I didn't realize that. I've been worrying about this. I'm glad you're keeping your eye out there. But what I'm saying is that the dialogue you pose is an excellent one. One simply needs the respect to recognize most people have their feet on the ground from their own worldview. Now, the place where it breaks down is when we become stylized. When you feel the pressure to be the woman who's doing X, and he feels the pressure to be the man doing Y, and instead of recognizing you both have elements of each other, you're busy in the shtick of doing this. And that's why I am absolutely, positively confirmed in my own spirit that groups create a phenomenon greater than themselves. And there is almost always somebody who can rise to the occasion and make something clear if everyone's willing to hear. I just came from quite a bit of time with some Sufis. Which is an alternative in the Muslim world. And the teachers were terrible. Ah, boy, they were terrible. But the one thing they weren't is they didn't get in anybody's way. And the group itself was so nice to each other that everybody had a wonderful time and learned a great deal because the group phenomena created it. So I thought that was great. And I see it all the time. And I see if most faculty would leave classes alone, you know, they could do their shtick. It's when they stop you from doing your shtick that's the problem. You know, sometimes when they do their thing, they're helpful. And sometimes they're not helpful. But they're most unhelpful when they get in the way. That in the community, I continually see that something can happen in the community when you all are having difficulty. Where if you don't worry about roles too much, you worry about the nitty-gritty of what needs to be done, almost always somebody rises to the occasion and takes care of business. But remember, it's a team sport. You need other people to be hearing it. Somebody looks at the two of you and says, you guys are caught, man. You're busy doing aww, he's busy doing aww, and it's not working. You have elements. And you just need, when that becomes apparent in the gathering, rather than people taking positions, you need somebody just to say it. Now, even if almost everybody takes positions, there's usually something in the group that will let it come up. There has to be some agreement on the part of everybody that when you feel that kind of quality happening, you all shut up and listen. That's the most important thing during the meeting, is that when you're caught, you learn to listen to the voice that's making sense. You don't run past it. And so part of why I keep using the word sensuality in this culture is that usually it comes from sensing something, not thinking something. You've got to start to become attuned enough to when all of a sudden the meeting feels, oh, right, I know this feeling. It feels like we're all caught and something's going to happen to make it clear. Let's all wake up for the clarity. So you got to get it so that you're not always running it with your head. If you're running it with your head, another number is going to come through your head. Oh, no, hey, man, that's not the one in our head. You see, that's where it comes. That comes in the martial arts. That comes in meditation. You're meditating, and you learn through meditation that as various senses make themselves apparent to you, you go for it. You know the door starting to open to some greater sense of ease and sense of connectedness. You just open to it. You don't have a whole dialogue. Oh, shit, I think the white light's coming. All right, there it goes. You see? It gets a sense of that you get kind of aligned to it, and you learn to do that. Which is why I think various physical arts are useful in this culture. Because they're there to get you to be sensitive to them happening. Not a discussion about it. I hope I'm helpful to you. A little helpful?
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is the kernel that makes a consensus meaning.
Right. And then it can come out of anybody.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be a consensus
Right. And that you can all learn to hear it. That is, even if you're caught, even if you guys are having the weirdest fucking dialogue you ever heard, absolutely, there's a chance within the context something will happen. If everyone has an agreement to learn how to hear that when it happens, then the community can work.
Yeah, well, the problem is when, for whatever reason, people can't hear it.
Mm-hmm. That's
and when it breaks down, it doesn't mend itself. Even if 90% of things
that
you find
it
from the floor,
it's
that 10%
you
don't find
them,
it's painful.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's true, but pain does come to the turf. That part we got.
Yeah.
That is no get around. Somebody has something. Thank you.
Yeah, it goes along the same lines. You have questions that you're still trying to sort out for yourself, and before you can even enter into a discussion with the community, how do you go about finding out what you really feel rather than the sort of struggle that might go on between, what you're thinking, what you're laying on yourself, and what you might be feeling, but those feelings might be for irrational reasons or where you're coming from socially rather than what's right for you?
Yeah, that was a lovely one. I'm going to play with you. So I got to move my ass too. One of the things we have in the United States is a preference, is we don't think we can learn something new if we're busy doing it at the same time. And one of the nice things that you have in a community is you have a context to be doing something, then a context to shut up and be reflective. Why don't you grab my arm, hold the focus real tight. Now I can sit here and try to figure out what I'd do if I got grabbed. And do all kinds of stuff. And part of it's useful. It is part of me needs to settle down and be quiet and find out what's going on with him. Because he's the problem. I'm not the problem. Now I can make myself the problem. Oh, God, I'm grabbed, I'm hold. Yep. Then what happens is I'm the problem. He's not the problem anymore. I'm the problem. So he's the problem right now. So I'm holding, he's fought me. And I can learn some ways to be quiet because he's training. This is not real life in a certain sense. We're training each other. So he's got me real tight, and I get a chance to feel and think about what the problem is. That's useful methodologically. Only to a point. And at some other point, I've got to find out what I want to do about the problem. And, hold me real tight, and initially, I screw up. So I don't say, oh shit, I better go back and do some more thinking. In this case, that's not the answer. In this case, it's to try again in terms of movement. Continually try in terms of movement to see what's going to go on. So part of it is to find a balance between what it means to be quiet within yourself and get a sense of what's going on. And then to abandon yourself for interchange. Now part of what happens, thank you, part of what happens in a community is you can start counting on other members of the community to honestly tell you how it looked like when you let loose. I do a lot of teaching of health professionals in terms of how to have presence when you're doing your mental health work. And so a group of staff people from a mental health agency were over a few weeks ago, and I was in mind, and I said, I never felt that mental health workers should work in anything other than teams. Because what happens is, while somebody's participating with a client, somebody else can be there trying to get a sense of what's going on. So that somebody lets loose in the context of it. Somebody else is there to kind of try to get some reflection back to it. But it's not going to work if you don't trust your teammate. You know, I don't trust her, she don't trust me, you don't trust me. And we say, all right, we got teamwork here, I'm going to work with the client, you guys are going to get in. And she answers back, and I say, she don't know what she's talking about. It's broken down. So essentially, unless there's already teamwork, you can't work as a team. Unless you actually feel there's members of the community who you're a team with, you're not going to be able to abandon yourself at various times to see how it works. You see, so you're reflective, you get some understanding, and then you kind of debate it, or you try some things out. And you maybe do it more overtly. You say to somebody, I really don't know what the hell I'm doing here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a few things into practice. I'm going to go to wherever and do something. Would you come along with me? Just so that I can be somewhat abandoned, but you're kind of there as my backup in case I need something. That's a lot to ask of a person. I don't mean it's a lot to ask in terms of taking it with me. It's a lot of openness to say to somebody openly, could you give me a hand? But hopefully that's the kind of stuff that you get from a community. You say to somebody, I'm going to give something a shot. Would you give me a hand with it? And hopefully they don't turn to you and say, what are you talking about this? Tell me this. They let you do it your way. That's what you're asking. So my sense is we're continually need to balance in this culture about what it means to be separate, draw on our tentacles, and be quiet and reflective. When we need to simply be dynamic and into the midst of it and seeing what kind of clarity comes from that. I'm sure you all heard of EST. I have some good friends who took EST training, and they wanted to bring their parents to EST training. This man is, the parents is vice president of European sales for Lockheed. So this couple came to me and they wanted to figure out, they said they wanted to bring their parents into EST. So I said, I'd be quiet for a minute. I said, aha, I got an idea. I said, your parents have crystal for drinking. They said, yes, we do. And I said, well, how do your parents feel about it? I said, well, my mom, she's the head of the crystal. And she doesn't let anybody else wash it and this and that, and so on and so forth. So I said, all right, I have a suggestion. You go to the store, and you buy two crystal glasses just like your mom's got. And when you go down for Christmas, when you toast, you actually turn around and throw two of the glasses into the fireplace. And the girl said, my mother would have a heart attack. And I said to them, at the very moment that you throw the crystal into the fireplace, you turn and you tell your mom about EST. That's crazy, no way. And I said, that's the degree that you'd have to disorientate your mother for her to ever hear what you had to say about EST. Now, I wasn't saying that to put down her mother at all. I was trying to make what she wanted to do realistic to her. It really wasn't anything about to put down her mom. Saying, if you really want to do that now, given what you've done with your mom and your dad, understand the leap you want her to make. If you want to do it incrementally over time, then this is another method. See, and that's important. That's what community can offer each other. It's the best, honest reflection back after you let somebody else try it out for a while. Just let them try it out for a while. Really think of yourselves as helping to be mirrors to each other, not bossy to each other, not teachers to each other. It's going to be hard enough at Stanford just to be friends to each other. Just friends. Does that help at all in terms of what you're asking?
You were talking a couple times about how the community could agree on certain things, like to agree to grapple with issues and stuff like that. And in the past, when I've been at Column Bay, we agreed, you know, are we going to be vegetarian or not, and stuff like that. And a couple times we talked about more just like values we might want to work on and stuff like that. But it would never come out in an agreement form. People would say, well, I'm interested in this, or I like this, you know. I'm interested in seeing if we can come to some basic things that we want to work on together or learn about together. But I don't really know how to do it.
That's a great question. Appreciate it. I think this one's probably understandable to everybody. You know that little experiment you do sometimes in living rooms where somebody lays down, everyone pushes on them, you get about 15 or 20 people, and you all push on the person, and you, with each person with fingers, can lift the person up? Mm-hmm. You ever seen that? Take my word for it. I'm not sure the details of it, but something about everyone pushes, whatever it is, and then the person becomes light. Well, that's my perception of what a community is that one of the primary reasons you want a community to agree on something. Now remember, in terms of the question you were asking earlier, agreeing doesn't mean that everybody does the same thing within the agreement. It means that there's an agreement that the community, in terms of its various levels, agrees to follow through on something. So there's a lot of different roles within an agreement. But the primary reason you ask to have a community do it is, what would it mean to have that much concentrated energy on one thing? Just as an experiment. Just to find out what it's like. Ari's got 11 brothers and sisters. And so when he's been here, we've been trying to get him together with some of my godchildren to play. Because he's used to having kids around. And when we first started Columbia, part of why we started this project with the free schools coming to Stanford to use our facilities, we wanted kids and old people as part of our lives. And everybody in the community had to take the consequences, because when you came back at lunchtime, there are little kids all over the place. So if you were somebody who didn't like little kids, and the house had made an agreement to open our facilities for this, what were you going to do? You know, we also agreed we wanted older people, so we invited various people for dinner so that we'd have some kind of spectrum of age and a spectrum of various ethnic backgrounds. So my sense is, if there may be some experiments you want to conduct in a social context, just to show each other what it'd be like if there was that much energy behind it. And as I say, usually the key to not having that happen, that she thinks that what you do is the same thing she's got to do if you agree on that subject. So if you decide that you can have a soup kitchen, as an example, or you agree to go to Atherton, that everyone does the same thing. And that's what makes it real, as compared to everybody knowing they're working on the same project together within different roles. I happen to think that it's very important to not only have different roles, but to change them. Change the roles, so you can get a feel for it, what's going on. Am I making any sense to you?
Yeah, but I'm still wondering, I can't even envision how to get started on. It just seems like if we tried to talk about it, then we wouldn't know where to start. How did these other ideas come
Good, out? That's very good. Because most people at Stanford start talking from here up. No, it's not a put down, it's just a fact. If you look at people's energy, people are thinking about stuff. Doesn't hit them in their heart, doesn't hit them in their ass and their legs. The kind of stuff that's real to Stanford people usually is not the stuff people talk about. You see? So part of what it would be is for various people in the community to be quiet for a while and see if they were to do anything, what would their heart lead them to do? Without being embarrassed on it. It might be that most of you work with your parents on something and that you'd have a joint project trying to communicate various things to parents. And you decide it's not going to be your own parents, it's going to be other parents, as an example. What it is the discussion has to start lower than the head. You see, it's got to get into the heart or some kind of practical consequences you regularly find yourselves in that lead you to this. I mean, we got into this thing with ROTC because we recognized that the only other well-organized group on campus was ROTC. And so we decided if we were going to have meaningful dialogue in terms of nonviolence, why not go to the other organized group, which is ROTC? But we did it because we had the yearning to communicate with the opposition, quotes, whatever that was. But the only way that was the opposition. So there was a whole community gathering around that. Some people never went out to the field. Some people just made the granola. Other people just went and bought the granola. But by the end, everybody had gone out to the field. What we did initially is we agreed that everybody would work on this project. That everyone would find the role they felt easiest with. And we would just do it over a semester period of time, or a term period of time. Fairly soon, various people wanted to take a peek and see what it was like. Now, part of what happens is some people who want to take a peek also get caught. In the sense that, let's say that I'm verbal. I know it's hard to believe. And so part of my propensity was to go out to the field. And I never got in to make the granola. It's important for the granola person to say to me, not only does she or he want to go out and see the field, it would probably be useful for me to go do some of the granola. See, it's got to be that give and take back and forth. Well, you agree that it's an experiment, so people really do need to try other jobs, other roles. So what happens is various people sit down, and you find what's close to your heart. Now, what you do is you don't find out what's close to your heart in terms of what you want to do, which you may not know the do yet. You find out what's close to your heart, and then see what the do is after that. So you may say, I especially feel pained about what's going on in Latin America. And this is not just a head trip I'm saying to people, you say, but you feel that the United States is really engaged in a war, You know, you say all these things and people say, it just sounds like ideology to me. You say, no, I actually feel that way. It's all right, we'll legitimize that. Somebody else says, just I feel that the kind of food we can buy around here is killing us. Now, even though we're vegetarian, where we get the food from, what is terrible, man. It's going to kill us. Okay? And somebody else says, I think the curriculum of undergraduate education at Stanford is horrendous. Just feels to me that it's really not about learning. So everybody goes around the room and talks about the different things they feel. And you come up with some agreement about what's the one the whole community would be willing to live with. Because of an experiment, what you can live with. You say, okay, now how can we have some kind of concentrated activity over a period of time just to see how the experiment goes? And at the beginning, one of the things Colombe agreed to is that we would have overcrowding in our rooms. Because nobody really knew what that was. See, you're talking to a Balinese who's got 11 brothers and sisters, you know, it's not really that interesting an experiment. You choose somebody else and you say, all right, there. In those days we had 53 people in Colombia.
It was a different house.
Yeah, that's right, it was a different house. Oh. And you say to somebody, got 53 people, how many stereos? 49! Uh-huh. Say, what would happen if we had 3 stereos in the house, just to see what that'd be like? So those are some of the things that we agreed to do. So we would do those microcosm experiments, while we did the things with ROTC, and when we did the thing by closing down the draft boards and going to jail. We had various levels of what community participation was. But we did it in terms of our capacity to do it. And remember, part of why we had capacity to do so many things at the same time is that the social context we found ourselves in, that's why I said that right from the very beginning, brought the very best out of people. So just like I'm saying, there's no big anti-war movement going on in the United States, although the United States is engaged in wars all over the place. That has to do with the subtlety of your observation. The more subtle you are, the more you'd be involved in an anti-war movement. So since you don't have that social context, your capacities are limited. You'll do less than we did at the beginning, only because of the world you're finding yourselves in. See, the energy, you know, is just really quite different. So you pick out one by coming, I would suggest, from the heart initially, and not feeling constrained that you have to figure out the answer yet of what would you do about it. And I think the most important thing to me always is to first find out how to communicate with the ones who are most like you. People keep thinking that's cheating. That is, if you're going to do an experiment and it's going to work, because for the most part you have somebody who's going to kind of help out, but that's cheating. So a lot of people, particularly students, think that the way to do things is find the very hardest way you could do it and then find out if it works. And it's not true. The experiment is too serious for that. You don't try to figure out the second day you decide to become vegetarian, how would you live if you didn't buy any foods, any grains, and just grew your own food? So I said, geez, how are we going to blow all that stuff? You know? You take it incrementally. It's not cheating, because part of the increments is to get you capable of the next step. It's actually an embodiment matter. If you are a little less sexist, a little more kind, a little bit more capable of making collective decisions, you're going to be different people. Different people. And the world around you is going to look weirder. You know, and you can't get away from that. Understand that you come back from Indonesia, it's not the same as before you went there. You see? So assume that the experiments are meant to affect you, and don't make them so big that you expect to blow it out, you know, at the very beginning, you know, because they're not going to do any good. You're not going to sustain it. And during the anti-war movement, I was fairly well known. I would have these arguments with people who were famous, these rock stars and people that would do concerts. I was supposed to give the rap and they were supposed to do the music. And their notion was that social change was like rock music. You just blew them out and gave them another concert. But you see, you don't do that. You don't. My job wasn't to inspire this group to turn in their draft cards without them having any understanding of what it would mean to deal with jail. It wasn't about that. See, and we would have these big differences. Somebody said, well, a real heavy gets a group of people and you know, got this whole thing. And a lot of it had to do with masculinity, in a certain sense. That what it was to do to be heavy is the bigger, the better, blah, blah, blah. So if you gave a rap and 90 people turned their draft cards in, I was a heavy speaker. And if I gave a talk and 30 people, you weren't as heavy. It wasn't about that. You know, and over time, people learn that. It wasn't about that kind of stuff. That was the old values with a different kind of trick to it. So I was a heavy dude in the anti-war movement. I wasn't an anti-war, that is, I really wasn't a peaceful person. Because I wasn't understanding the kind of preparation somebody needed to get ready to go to jail. So that's what I'm saying. So when you think about a community project, and I'm speaking to you all, speak from your hearts, figure out for a community what you're capable of living out. And then do it as realistically as possible, treating yourself as real peers to each other. And when you put out airs, and somebody in the community, if not more of you, have a sense of humor at the same time. Watch people get fluffy like little chickens and whiskers. And watch other people get real small like little chickens. You know, everybody's got their number. You know, and try to enjoy the friendship of letting that come out. But don't be surprised if then you...